7 minutes past seven. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. Jimmy Bartel is in the house and joining us tonight, two of the big talents emerging in the midfield, Sam Walsh and Bailey Smith, to join us in the first hour. Two of the really elite young midfielders in the competition. And speaking of which, young James Bartel is also with us. Now, Jimmy, if you had to pick and you only had one pick to go up there and win you a premiership at the Giants, would you take the number seven pick in the draft 2 years ago, which was Bailey Smith? Or would you take the number one pick in the draft, who was Sam Walsh?
Can I have both?
You are not allowed to have both. You've always been greedy up there. You've had enough first-round picks up there. You've got one to go.
Well, who do we speak to first?
We go to Sam Walsh first.
All right, I'll first say Sam Walsh, then once we get Sam off the line, I'll go Bailey Smith.
Swing. I like a bloke who can jump on and off the fence at will. Darren Carl also is a huge name in Australian sport and global sport. He's been a fantastic coach for more than a couple of decades now. He's going to join us. But we begin tonight, Jimmy, with Andrew Westacott. I don't think it was any surprise that the Grand Prix got pushed back, but the CEO of the Grand Prix has a new date for the big event in Melbourne. Let's just hope that the drivers are not too put out and honour us with their presence in November. Andrew Westacott joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Andrew. It's been a difficult time, but you've got a resolution.
Yeah, Jimmy, Jared, we have. There is a resolution and a postponement to the 21st of November. I'll tell you what, is a lot better than a cancellation from the 21st of March. So it's a really good outcome, and an outcome I reckon is going to throw up some great possibilities on track from a racing point of view.
Well, before we get to the on-track stuff, Andrew, how did you settle on November 21? There would have had to been some negotiating with Grand Prix either side of you as well.
Yeah. Hey, Jimmy, have you ever played musical chairs? Because I tell you what, the good thing is we don't have to do that negotiation, but we've got a strong enough relationship with Formula One that when it became not possible to stage the event in March because of the prevailing conditions here with quarantine and the like, there weren't many gaps on the calendar, and the only one allowed us to achieve what we wanted to was Brazil came forward by 1 week and Saudi Arabia and Abu Dhabi moved out a week to the 5th and 12th of December. So we're in the middle of, five other events, and that came about because of close working with the Victorian government and the guys at Formula One over the Christmas New Year period.
Third last, I think it is, on the order of events for the Grand Prix. That's normally when Lewis Hamilton wraps up the title in the third last one, doesn't he?
Yeah, it is. Three of the last 4 years, Jimmy, have been decided in the third last round. And when Australia last hosted a Formula One event in November, it was back in Adelaide in 95. And Michael Schumacher won the championship in the third last round that year. And his son, Mick Schumacher, makes his Formula One debut. So there's a lot of good things. And we've seen with MotoGP how the fans love a championship decider. And fingers crossed, that's what we can give them in springtime in Melbourne.
So what else will change, if anything? I mean, it's a pretty crowded calendar around there, but it's pretty crowded in March as well.
Yeah, it is. Look, Jared, I hope that all 23 races get up, and if 2020 or last year is anything to go by, Formula One had the opportunity to say it was all too hard, and they delivered 17 races. And between Formula One and MotoGP, there were 31 championship races across 14 countries. So they'll be doing their best to make sure that there's 23 races, and we're the third last one, as we've already said. So it promises to get away on the 28th of March in Bahrain, and then go to Europe, and then do the normal swing through other locations.
So if you can get away on the 28th of March in Bahrain, why can't it get away on the 21st of March in Melbourne? And I guess putting a little bit of flesh on the bone, is it the team owners that were problematic, or is it the team superstars, the drivers, that were more problematic?
Well, no, it's a different set of requirements. Given the prevailing conditions here in Australia, the requirement for a March event was a 14-day quarantine period. In Bahrain, the approach is more of a bubble arrangement where they're operating between hotel circuit back to hotel. And, we pursued a lot of these mitigation strategies, but for the current time, they're not possible here in Australia. But we believe that, over the next 10 months, the regime under which we can operate with sort of dedicated flights. And a lot of the things that the tennis guys are doing, we're going to be piggybacking on to make sure we can put in place for the safety of the teams and also the safety of Victorians.
So just to explain, if you can, because I'm sure a lot of our listening audience would be pondering the same question I am. Why, if tennis can do it, the Grand Prix can't do it? What's different?
Well, what's different is that the way Formula One operates, Jared, is 23 races where they leapfrog and skip from one location to another. And before us would have been testing in Bahrain or Barcelona. And it's just not practical to, at every stop along the way, have 14 days of downtime when they're actually normally flying from a race back to a factory, making engine changes, aerodynamic changes, marketing adjustments to sponsorships and so on. And there's a difference inherently between the sports. And, you know, Formula One wasn't able to achieve the arrangements that tennis is able to achieve, and good on the tennis guys.
So, Andrew, does that mean that there's no V8 supercars going around? Because we've seen them go around the Albert Park track at the same time as well.
Well, they're 2 weeks before us, the new date in the 21st of November, they'll be racing in New Zealand. And their season finale would be a couple of weeks after in the Gold Coast. Now, we've got to work in detail now with all stakeholders, and I hope we can come to an arrangement that sees supercars as a championship round, because it'd be a great penultimate round to have them in Albert Park and then going up to the Gold Coast for the final round. So they're definitely one that we want on the program, Jimmy, and we haven't got them confirmed just yet.
I'm still scratching my head a little bit, Andrew. I don't mean to be difficult here, but just going back to my previous question, what is going to be different in November, given that they're coming from one race a week or so earlier,
to Melbourne?
To now. What's different about November to March?
Well, at the moment in March, the health restrictions from a federal point of view and a state point of view are that any returning person, any returning traveller, whether you're a tennis player, a Formula One team member or a member of the public, you have to isolate in strict quarantine for 14 days.
Right.
You know, with the emergence of a vaccine for the public level of, I guess, operational maturity with the logistics for quarantine hotels and health arrangements and the proving of all these things, Jared, we hope that we can get a set of mitigations that allow them to isolate, but in an environment that allows them to go to from, say, four dedicated hotels to the circuit, not mixing with, so none of the sort of hoi polloi of mixing with people in the paddock and on the grid. They'd operate in the same sort of isolated manner that the tennis players. So that's what's likely to be different, and we've got time to work through that now, and we didn't have time in the lead-up to March.
And that now answers my question. No, that answers the question, but ultimately there is a little bit of hope in this decision.
Well, I'll always leave these medical decisions to the government and the medical authorities, and what I want to do is, yes, I want to use all my hope to make sure that I can have crowds, that I can make sure that I can have the Grand Prix back in Melbourne and stimulate the economy and excite the fans. So, if you can keep your fingers crossed, then let's get the fans back to the footy as well as the Grand Prix.
No, absolutely hoping for that, but clearly a lot of things have got to fall into place for the Grand Prix to actually get underway, even be it in November.
Yes, they do, and we all learn in COVID that you can never be too optimistic. Yep. But I do believe that with 10 months of planning and rigorous mitigation and testing regimes and all these sorts of things, you've got to remember these people in Formula One have a zero-tolerance approach to COVID. And if really Lewis Hamilton or Valentino Rossi in MotoGP, if you test positive, you don't race. So they've been able to operate successfully, as you'd expect for a pretty sophisticated sport like it. But we've still got a lot of work to do to make sure that the rules and regulations are complied with.
Just one quick one before you go. Is this just a one-time thing for this year, or is it always going, you're locked away for 2 or 3 years in this slot?
At the moment, Jimmy, it's a one-off change, but that doesn't mean that it can't be permanent in the future. But we're open-minded, and we're probably going to need to make that call because of the global calendars and the way they're sorted out. by around June or July. So we're going to have a good look at what all the options are to make sure that, you know, whether it stays in the end of the season or goes back to the start of the season and vice versa for MotoGP, we're going to have a look and see what's best, because there is a lot to like about horsepower in Melbourne in November. The horse racing proves it, and we hope that a couple of weeks before summer, this is going to be a fantastic event.
Andrew, appreciated the text last night forewarning us of the decision, and again, a follow-up interview to kick us off tonight. Good luck, and let's hope it all unfolds as you hope.
No worries, Jared and Jimmy. And my money's on Bailey Smith as a Dogs fan, so make sure that you also pump him up, will you?
I'll see if we can give him a bit of a run as well. Andrew Escott, CEO of the Australian Grand Prix. It's now been moved to November, and you can look for the trusted Australian-made logo to be sure it's authentically Australian-made. Well, Blues fans, everywhere I go, Jimmy, people say, where do the Blues are they going to finish? A friend down at Bunnings in Port Melbourne, he pulled me up the other day and said, is it all hype this year? And I must admit, I went fairly strongly with no, I'm a believer. Blues to make the finals this year, Sam Walsh to be one of the stars driving that result. He joins us after this. 21 minutes past 6 o'clock. Sam Walsh, Carlton Young Gun, about to join us. This is Sports Day, where it's Kia's open season. It's on now with match-winning deals and Red Energy. Well, I gave you a choice, Jimmy. Walsh or Smith? You went with Walsh, so why don't you open up the batting?
Sure will. Sammy Walsh, welcome to the show. Carlton, back into pre-season. New, you know, picks everywhere. Surely a level of excitement there at the Blues.
Yeah, Jimmy and Jared, yeah, thanks for having me, first of all. And Jimmy's looking after the ex-St. Joey's boys, so thanks for that, Jimmy. But, yeah, it's good to be back into it. We obviously had a fair few inclusions through the trade and draft, so it's a pretty exciting time for those guys to get involved at the club. And it's been good to get stuck back into it with all the older boys after Christmas, so it's been good fun.
Started your career out on the wing. Are you looking to move a fair bit inside now?
Yeah, I think that's a transition that I want to take with my game. And the thing that I pride myself on is probably being a versatile player. So I'm happy to play various roles for the team. But I think a strength for us this year, we'll have plenty of guys that can go through different roles. And I think I can be one of them. And there's things that I'm working on to try and transition my game into more on ball time. So I'm continually working at that and see where that lands me.
How big a part of the footy factory is St. Joey's, the world-famous football factory? Because James Bartel is telling me that it's the most significant element of the Geelong footy factory.
Yeah, I think he's pretty spot on. There's been plenty of great footballers like Jimmy and Cameron Ling, and you can name plenty more that have come from Joey's. And it is a very good school with a great history, but it's something I'm very proud to be a part of is the sort of Joey's family, I guess it is. It's a great school and always looked after me and plenty of others. So I made some great mates there over the time and had some fun playing footy there as well.
Now, we had John Longmire on last night, Sam, and I was trying to get him to get on the front foot and give us his three-year plan, and he went with process. So that excuse has been utilised already this week. So you're not allowed to go with just following the process and the result will look after itself. But surely every Blues fan is entitled to believe that we're playing finals this year in 2021.
Yeah, I think you're right. I reckon the expectation for us will be finals football this year, but it does sound cliche and boring, but the process to get there, if you want to use that word.
No, there's no use of any excuses. We're playing finals this year.
No, yeah, that's outcome based, but at the moment we're willing to put in the work to get in that position. So that comes through. We want to play attacking and hard-nosed footy, and that's how we want to be known as a club, is really, really attacking and just play an exciting brand of footy that allows us to win games of footy, which ultimately leads to playing finals football.
Well, it sounds like, Sam, that the next step for you guys to play finals footy is your ball movement. Of course, you know, a couple of years ago, there was a lot of players behind the ball for Carlton. It was complete focus on stopping the opposition scoring, but you guys couldn't score much yourself. It sounds like David Teague and you guys are going to work on over summer is ball movement and hitting the scoreboard.
Yeah, absolutely, Jimmy. We we want to be a physical team that moves the ball quick. So with the weapons that we've now got and the way we're training at the moment, I think that's been a big focus for us, is trying to play the game in our forward half and trying to move the ball quick to catch opposition off guard. And that's something that's been building nicely out of off-season. But also, defensively, if you put yourself in good positions, that allows you to attack and go at teams the other way. So it's a fine balance, but that's how we want to play our footy this year, and we're working towards that now, which will be good.
I imagine your ears are already ringing. You've intercepted the footy or won a free kick. Looping around the left-hand side is probably Adam Saad, and screaming for it on the right-hand side for a handball receive is Zach Williams. That must be pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's been great to have them around the club, and not only are they great footballers, but they're great people to have around as well. That's something we're pretty big on. But yeah, Zachy Williams' ball use has just stood out at training, and Sardi's pace and everything we've seen from the highlights package has been there from day one. So they've added a great element to our group, along with some other draftees and boys that have been traded in. So really looking forward to hopefully playing alongside them throughout 2021.
Have you felt as if it's been a long off period? Because a lot of guys have only just come back. Normally they come back before Christmas. Or have you felt it's been a short off season period because the season finished relatively late?
Yeah, I think for me personally, it has felt like a fairly long off season. Usually after we finish the season, we get about eight weeks off as young boys, but we got 11 weeks off this year. But we've always got a program to follow, which started to ramp up pretty heavily at that 8 week mark. So it feels like we've been getting a good solid work in, and now that we're back into it with a full group of training, it's definitely come around quick, for the fact that games are only about a month and a bit away, which is exciting, because every training session you're doing is with a fair bit of purpose, and it's pretty exciting for our group to have games around the corner.
Now, you've got a young ruckman. Some call him DeConing, others call him DeConning. I'll get you to clarify that. But if ever there was going to be a player that looked as if he could just take the competition by storm in his third or fourth year, he looks like one to me.
Yeah, he's a ripper, Tom DeConing. That's what I go with. But we all call him King, so kids are pretty short and simple. Yep. But he's a great player to play with, and he's a year older than me, so he's going into his fourth year. But we've seen him at the back end of last year really taking the game on, and his presence around the ground was definitely noticeable, and he's put in a huge body of work. So for him to get to be able to do that out on the park towards the end of last year, I think will give him great confidence heading into this year. And not only is he an unreal tap ruckman, but he was starting to clunk him around the ground, which is pretty valuable in this day and age. So he's one that I love playing with, and hopefully he can have a big year, which I'm sure he will.
He's a wild card for me, Jimmy. There'll be a lot of people talking about Mackay and half a dozen others.
No.
But the King could well be that by the end of the next year or two.
Yep, great pickup, and he's mobile for a big ruckman too. But Sam, one player who doesn't bother the new rule changes would be yourself. You know, with interchange going down, you just run all day, which makes me feel sick. How much you run. Has it been spoken much about with strength and conditioning guys, the way you go about training with interchange being wound down a little?
Yeah, I think I was speaking to our high performance team, and they think that it'll have a little bit of an impact, but it won't be massive. Usually games last year, we were probably only using 75-80, but obviously they will be longer quarters this year, back to the 20 minutes. So there will be elements of conditioning where some players will have to stay on the ground for longer periods of time, but I don't think it'll have massive implications on the game, to be honest.
I haven't had a look at the fixture closely, but I assume that the Blues are playing Richmond in round one?
Yeah, correct.
Well, yep. I'm just getting you warmed up, ready to go. Surely it's time. How long's it been since you've won in round one?
I'm going to go with 2011.
2011. It's been a while. I'm not sure it's been that long, but who knows? It's a while, but
he would have still been at St. Joey's then.
He would have been just starting at St. Joey's in shorts. Great to have you on board, Sam. It's been great to watch you take the show by storm, and we're looking forward to seeing you really ramp it up again in 2021.
Thanks, Atterita, Jimmy. Yeah, thanks for having me. Cheers.
Sam Walsh. Now, you happy to still stay with Sam?
Yeah, well, he tipped the cap to the school, so maybe just a little bit of bias there.
Okay, nice work. There's Sam Walsh. What a great pickup the Blues have got there. Have you got them in your eight?
Yes. Eighth.
Eighth? Yeah, it's
you?
Yeah, definitely. I'm a bit. I was pretty keen on the Blues last year, but they ran out of juice. But you can just see, you know, Mackay improving, DeConing, the King.
I know it's not everything, but the win down at Geelong.
It's huge, wasn't it?
Massive.
Yeah, I was calling that game.
It was, no one wins there.
No, it was a big game indeed. It's an exciting time to be a bagger, as we've just been discussing. You can become a member for as little as $65. It might be $85, but I still haven't got the new glasses. $65. Call 1300.
Mention your name at 65.
586. I'll say that again. 1300-227-586. Or head to carltonfc.com.au today. Sam Walsh, he joined us for Australian Made. The Australian Made logo, be sure it's Aussie. This is Sports Day. Plenty more to come. All for McDonald's. 7 new flavours of frozen Coke at Macca's, now available. Welcome back to Sports Day. Well, tennis is always in the news at this time of the year for very different reasons in some respects due to the COVID crisis right around the globe. And tennis is a global sport, Jimmy. But it's always great to talk to people who are at the coalface. And one bloke who's made an enormous contribution to tennis, as well as being a great tennis player himself, is Darren Cale. And he joins us on the line, the coach of a dual slam winner, Simona Halep. Welcome to you, Darren, and great to have you on board in 2021.
Great. Thanks, Jared and Jimmy. Good afternoon.
It's a really difficult time, no doubt, for all athletes dealing with this. But you've got a world-class player who's been at the top of a game for a long period of time, won a couple of slams under your guidance, and I suspect you have to point to the opportunity that's here for someone like Simona rather than dealing in the negatives.
Geez, I might have to get you on the phone to it, have a bit of a chat. Stay positive with everything that's been going on. It's been an interesting year, and tennis has been one of those tough sports where, because you're not localised and playing in one country and rely on tournaments throughout all over the world. And I know that Tennis Australia is dealing with bringing in players from over 100 countries into Australia. It's an enormous operation. And for the players to get their head around what's going on down here in Australia as well, every country has their own set of rules when they're dealing with the COVID-19. And Australia is probably one of the strictest. And for them to get their heads around the fact they've got to do 2 weeks of semi-hard quarantine down here, it's not easy for everybody to understand. But what's online is that a chance to play the Australian Open, which is a Grand Slam, and keep a lot of us employed, not just the players. Obviously, the top 20 or 30 players are doing very, very well. But the players outside of that, you know, they need the money and they need to keep working and keep playing. And it also keeps a lot of coaches involved, a lot of physios, a lot of trainers. So, yeah, the industry needs to keep ticking along, and that's why Tennis Australia is doing such an incredible job for everybody to put this event on.
Simona is one of those rare players that can play on any surface and win, you know, final Australian Open, one French, one Wimbledon, semi-final US Open. What's been the big focus for her? Is it just picking the right tournaments, you know, getting right for the big event?
Yeah, I think her consistency has been underrated over the last 5 or 6 years. She hasn't dropped outside the top five in the last 5 or 6 years. And for someone like Simona, who's about 5'6", and she doesn't have a major weapon in her game, to be able to do that week in, week out, and keep winning and keep her ranking at the top of the game, I'm really proud of the fact that she's been able to do that, because it's no easy thing. And you'll see a lot of players kind of that play a little bit similar to Simona, that they'll have one or two really good years, and then it just gets the better of them because physically it's so demanding to do that. So they'll have a bit of a slump for a year or two, their ranking will drop way down, and then they'll come back again. But Simona hasn't done that. She's been able to find that fire within her belly to keep on competing, and she hates to lose. You probably, if you watch her play, you see that on the court. She gets incredibly frustrated when she's down and nearing defeat. It's one of the great things about her is she's such a fighter, and she does it the tough way, and she finds ways to win tennis matches that she shouldn't really win, and she stays alive in tournaments. And as we know in any sport, they're the best wins, the ones where you're not playing as well as you possibly can, and but you find a way to win just to stay alive.
What about the fire in your own belly, Darren? It's a pretty exacting career you've taken on when you have a family and you're on the global scene. The travel component is fairly savage. How many weeks away would you be from your family, or do you take them with you, or are they old enough for that it's all okay? Give us a bit of an insight into the path that you've travelled.
Well, my wife is pretty smart. She's been with me for about 30 years now, so she likes to pick and choose the good events to come away to. So she's got free rein as to when she wants to come and when she wants to stay home. But that's part of the deal, is that if I'm going to do this job and going to be away for about 30 to 35 weeks of the year, whenever the family wants to come away, they're more than welcome to. So more than often, we'll find Victoria and the kids at Wimbledon, coming across to the Australian Open. Indian Wells and Miami are a couple of great events as well. So, yeah, it is a demanding sport. If you're not up to the travel, forget it. And that's being a tennis player, but also being a coach. And that's why I think you find a lot less former players. And especially, you know, I'm talking about the top ones, not myself, but I'm talking about the Boris Beckers, Stefan Edbergs, Ivan Lendl's. You know, they dip their toes into coaching every now and then, but it's difficult to do it year in, year out. But for me, you know, it's the next best thing to playing. For me, I had my career cut a little bit short because of knee injuries, and I jumped straight into coaching. And I was really, really fortunate. I had Leighton Hewitt as my first go around. And when you have a player like that, it's sort of, you know, you talk about the fire in the belly. It certainly put the fire in the belly having him. And from there, I had a couple of great opportunities with Andre and then with Simona. So for me, it's the next best thing to playing, and I thoroughly enjoy it.
Where do you see tennis evolving to at the present time? It's been rocked in many ways more than most codes, given that we were transitioning away from Davis Cup to ATP Cup and to team events. Davis Cup still hanging around to a slight degree, not so much this year or last year, but where do you see it evolving post-COVID in the next 5 years or so?
That's a great question, Jared. Honestly, I'm not 100% sure. Look, tennis is in a good shape. We talk about tennis here in Australia or even the US, and maybe it's not at the forefront of everybody's thinking, but you go to Europe, you know, Simona is a rock star across in Romania, and she's the highest profile athlete there by far, and I know a lot of the European tennis ratings when she's playing, they go through the roof when she's on. So, and you can say the same for Nadal, you can say the same for Federer, for Djokovic. So in Europe, it's huge, but we need to do a better job here in Australia, and especially in the US. And we need to do a much better job of getting more mainstream TV, tennis on TV, and making it attractive for the viewers. So when we have Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, Serena Williams, Venus Williams, you know, a lot of those players are not going to play forever. When they do decide to retire, we need the younger generation to step up. And what has been encouraging is we're starting to see a few of those players. We saw Dominic win the US Open, Dominic Thiem, last year. Yep. Zverev's made it to a final. We've got some younger players in the women's game as well that are coming through that are incredibly exciting, with Naomi Osaka and Świątek. I don't know if you got a chance to see her play across at the French Open last year, but she was amazing during that tournament. So there are some new names coming through, and we have to make them superstars of the game and just forge on once all the top players do decide to retire. Hopefully that's not too soon, though, sure.
And have you got more pull at board level, or has Roger Rashid got more pull from the cheap seats?
No, Roger Rashid, he's the king here of South Australia. So he and Koshy, they are basically running the club.
Mate, great to have you on board. It's really exciting that we're having a tournament. Obviously, there's all sorts of dramas around it. But once the players get here, and hopefully with the grace of God, we don't have a drama with the virus, the tournament gets underway. And, well, Simona Halep, you may be there helping you lift the chalice in about 4 weeks' time. All the best and good luck.
Thank you. And big props also to Craig Tiley and Tennis Australia for making it happen.
That's the build-up, the Australian Open, and it's today's APCO Hop topic. You can win a barbecue, and there's a winner in every store. APCO Service Stations, we've got you covered. More Sports Day right after this. Time now for the final word for Fujitsu, experiencing year-round comfort with Fujitsu, Australia's favourite air. And earlier tonight, as we said at the top of the program, we spoke to Bailey Smith, number 7 in the draft 2 years ago, and asked him his thoughts on Adam Treloar. Here's some of what he had to say.
100%. He's a gun, really. Obviously, we watched his highlights package today for like an initiation sort of thing. We watched all the boys because we haven't been able to get together because of COVID. We watched it on the green floor, and yeah, he's a gun. So it's just really exciting to see what he'll do for the team. And oh, sorry, that's my alarm. And he'll obviously.
So you have an alarm go off every time somebody signs up to Instagram. That is great stuff.
Mate, that was actually for the interview, but it was a few minutes late. Yeah, I got the timing wrong. But yeah, he'll just make everyone go to another level, I guess, as whenever a good player comes into the side, everyone wants to obviously get to their level or better, and it'll just bring up the standard. So it's very exciting, I guess.
Another player at your club was probably the second most player spoken about during trade and free agency, Josh Dunkley. He ends up staying. You're a player who's in the game when, you know, player movement is just a norm. You know, players pick up and move and come to different clubs. Does it actually bother players at the Dogs or at a club when a player says, I'm out the door, but they end up staying? Does it have to be addressed?
No, I don't reckon it needs to be addressed. Oh, well, it's been addressed. Just sort of laugh about it and chat about it with Dunks. He's that kind of character. He's an amazing person, and you know, we like, I don't know, welcome him again, I suppose, with open arms. And yeah, there's certainly no malice behind it. So you take it with a grain of salt. It's just, yeah, give him love again. So no, it's fine. It's certainly, I don't know, it's not weird, but yeah, I don't know. I suppose it's so normal nowadays for players to want to move and stuff. It's, yeah, you don't sort of look into it too much.
There's Bailey Smith, 170,000 Instagram followers, Jimmy. That puts you to shame.
It does.
He's the third highest in the AFL from all reports. It's amazing. What a good player the Dogs have got there. And you can catch the full chat on our podcast. Now, the question I've got for you, Jimmy, as we head up to the 7 o'clock news, is tonight we've spoken to Bailey Smith and Sam Walsh, mm-hmm. two of the great guns of the under-21 brigade in the AFL. Players in their second or third year is what I'm chasing from you. If you had to name your top five, and I know I've only given you a couple of minutes preparation.
Yeah, so don't hassle me, people, if I leave out a player from your club.
Well, I mean, that's what it's all about.
Off the top of my head.
Off the top of your head.
All right. Now, well, those two gentlemen, Bailey and
You're
Walsh.
Going with Walsh and Smith.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yep. Do the Kings count as one? Can I count them as
you
one?
You can't. No, they're half. They're only a half at the moment.
Oh, I'll go with the one at... Oh, I'm counting them as one.
You're counting the Kings as one?
One. Okay. Because they're twins.
Right.
I'm going Zach Butters from Port Adelaide.
You're going Zach Butters, okay. He had a big year.
Yep. I think he can do a lot of...
So you've got one pick left, and I'll give you who you've got to pick from just off the top of my head. There's plenty of others. You got a bloke who was best on ground 3 weeks in a row in his first three games.
Ramjet.
Called Matthew Rowell. You got a bloke who plays a little bit like him, Tom Green, who plays for your mob. You've got Noah Anderson, who is a star, and you've got another kid over in Port Adelaide, Connor Rosie, who goes okay. Some, in fact, prior to probably midway through this year, most would have said that he was the best out of that lot.
I'm going to go at picking out those three games, 8 or 9 Brownlow votes, Matthew Rowell.
So Matthew Rowe picks up the fifth position in no particular order. So you've got Smith, Walsh, Rowe,
Kings.
The Kings that make up number one or the fourth position. And you've got Tom Green. You've got Zach Butters. So missing out, you've got Tom Green.
This is off the top of my head.
I know that. Anderson and Rosie. But it just goes to show, because I'd have asked you this time last year, Rosie would have been there, I reckon. Yeah. Obviously, Rowe wouldn't have been. Rosie may well have even been number one. So it's a bloody good group of players, isn't it?
Yeah, most more than that 2018 draft.
Yeah, been absolutely amazing, that talented group. And there's plenty more on show. And we're not far away from it kicking off. This has been Sports Day, all for Red Energy. Born and bred in Melbourne, that's Red Energy. And, of course, our good friends at Kia. Welcome back to Sports Day. For Wilson Homes, they believe in great design, so you love being home. The latest in sport for Vic Emergency is one of the highlights of the evening for me. We kick off the second hour with the latest in sport, and tonight it'll be a sport report with a difference. We're going to use the MRP rating from Jimmy, and he's going to tell us whether it is high, low, or medium impact as a story. So don't forget, for Vic Emergency, being prepared for fire could save your life. Download the Vic Emergency app at emergency.vic.gov.au. So, Jimmy, you're in charge of the MRP. I'm going to actually tell you about these stories. And at the end of it, after our brief discussion, I'll get you to give us an MRP impact rating.
Sure.
Low, medium, or high as a news story. And we kick it off with a sad story. St Kilda defender Dylan Robertson, he is taking time away from the club to consider his footballing future, which essentially means he is very close to retiring. He's consulted with specialists and club medical doctors, etc., over his concussions and his various injuries, in particular that tricky situation he has with his heart. But he will come back and make a final decision shortly. Jim, it's always been, I guess, at the back of everyone's mind that with his cardiac condition, Dylan Robertson may well pull up stumps earlier in his career. But in many ways, the form has not enabled him to get a game. So there's a couple of issues there.
Yeah, medium impact. So I'm standing at the front of AFL House here on Monday following Steve Hocking, explaining the ARC stuff up again. So medium impact for me, because I remember that day down at Geelong where he collapsed behind play, and that was frightening.
Yeah, that was high impact.
That was high impact. So pretty scary. I thought he was in good form before the heart condition.
Yeah.
He was that set-up rebound defender, the one who played off and played that role really well.
Talked in All-Australian squad contention at one stage?
Yeah, I think he was that, going that well, because he found his role in his niche, and it was a free pickup for the Saints. Remember, he was delisted by Freo those years ago. So medium impact, the MRP as a rule.
Yeah, well, let's hope he does find some form, but I don't think it's going to be with St Kilda. That's the gut feel I have. Now, Australian cricket coach Justin Langer, he has unloaded on a number of high-profile journalists, both of them former cricketers. He's described the criticism of Tim Payne and Stephen Smith as complete rubbish, and he's given it to Michael Vaughan in particular. High, medium, or low impact?
I'm sending this straight to the tribunal for absolute rubbish story. What? I've gone the other way. So it's that low of impact. I've sent it to the tribunal for wasting my Monday night as an MRP. The best thing Langer could have done is gone, this is complete garbage, and just shut it down, because that's what it was.
Indeed. I mean, raising the issue of cheating by suggesting that
big word,
rubbing somebody's block mark out is cheating. I mean, but goodness me. As if you can't just get a new block.
Well, most batsmen stand there after a tea or a drinks break and go, umpire, can I have two centres, two legs, whatever?
How big a issue do you think it is having centre?
No,
most half of us did it because somebody else did it before us.
Yeah, because you used to sort of stand there, and that was when you lived. They all bat on off stump now.
Yeah.
And they all walk across their crease and they back themselves in. They don't get hit on the pad.
So a low impact. In fact, I think it may have even been less than low. It could have been in the garbage bin.
I'm fining you for wasting my Monday.
Okay. Langer actually revealed he spoke to Darren Goff and after he accused Smith of cheating. So he's got on the front foot.
Darren Goff is just classic Pom stirring the pot, isn't he?
Mm.
Just take shots from the other side of the world.
Pot shots from Darren Goff and a big response from the Australian coach. Speaking of coaches, Ken Hinckley's been rewarded with a 2-year contract extension by Koshy. Jeez, it's amazing what a year in football can do for your fortunes.
Yeah, low impact, because I'm surprised that hasn't happened already. Yeah, he's been fantastic, Ken, and especially under the pressure that the big kibosh puts on you every year, going, don't make finals, I sack you.
Yep.
He's a very vocal president. So, low impact. We all probably expected Ken Hinckley to go on again at the Port Adelaide pair.
Bernard Tomic, 1 win away from a return to the Australian Open. He's going to play JP Smith, fellow Aussie, in Doha tonight for a spot in the main draw. And there's actually, I think, a bit of interest in this.
Yeah, the MRP probably is throwing it out without even looking at it.
Yeah.
I want to see Byrne string a couple together before we start talking about Byrne. He can keep riding around his orange BMW for me.
It probably reflects where we're at in sport just at this very point in time. Bernard Tomic is making the sport report at the top of the program because he's actually one win away from beating a no-name in a challenger in Doha.
I think you said it well last night. Good on him for going to Doha and trying to qualify and do it the hard way. I think a couple of years ago, Byrne would just go, oh, I'll just sit here and count my millions.
Millions,
as he'd say. But, good on him. He's trying to fight his way back.
We'll keep you up to date on that particular issue as soon as we can. As we know that the Grand Prix has been delayed to November, whether or not it means it's been delayed completely, I think is still debatable. We spoke to Westcott at the start of the program last night.
Yeah, November, they've pushed it back, which the date that it lands on is, I think, the third last Grand Prix of the year, which normally the champion is either, driving to win the championship or it's locked up. So I guess it gives it a bit of an interesting factor instead of being the first one off the rank every year.
Yeah, I think we're mixing it up is probably a good thing. I don't think we needed the...
Does it start later then? Because we're sort of heading into a little bit of daylight savings as the twilight one that they've always wanted.
Yeah, but it's in daylight savings as it is.
Mm.
So
it's just the start of daylight savings
instead of the end.
Yeah.
Indeed.
There you go.
Righto, and finally, a sad story. Frank Arok, a name that is well known to us all, died at the age of 88. He was a big name in the world game in this country for a long time, and he coached the Socceroos between 83 and 89. So rest in peace, Frank.
Yep. Yep. Big
No rankings for deaths.
No rankings for deaths.
This week's Furphy unbelievable moment is Steve Smith returning to form in the third test. How'd you rate his century?
Pretty good. When nobody else got the ton, so good batting.
Introducing Furphy Crisp Lager, easy drinking, full strength. It's unbelievable, and that's why it's an unbelievable moment. This is Sports Day. New North Melbourne assistant coach Anthony Rocker is about to join us. Well, as promised at the top of the program, Anthony Rocker is about to join us, new North Melbourne assistant coach. This is Sports Day, of course, for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. From the black and the white stripe to the blue and the white stripe, not much has changed bar the colour. Welcome to you, Rock, and thanks for your time.
Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to be on with you guys.
Tell us, what's your role going to be at North Melbourne under David Noble?
I'm going to be working with the rucks and the tall players. So obviously working with the talls is going to be aerial and marking, body positioning, all that sort of stuff that entails being a tall player, as well as, you know, the little things that they need to do with the ground level stuff and the tackling and the one percenters and things like that. And most of the time will be taken up with the rucks as well.
Anthony, Jimmy Bartel here. This is a bit tongue-in-cheek, but nearly two-thirds of players there are new to the list. There was a big cull.
Yep.
And then you add all the coaching panel as well. Did you have a big introduction night with name tags?
I haven't been in yet, boys. I start on Monday. I guess that's what's going to happen. Like I said, a lot of the players, are new draftees and new into the club, and I don't know too much about them, but there's still some players there who have been around for a while and who can add experience to that younger list. So I watched a thing on Twitter this morning, and they were going around. I think someone had to say a couple of words about someone else in the group. So that was a clever way to do it.
Yeah, complete rebuild, as everyone knows, when you clear out that many players and new coaching staff. When you've spoken to Dave Noble, what's the first thing he's aiming to improve at the club? When he was up at Brisbane with Fagan up there, they just worked on defence for 1 year and the fundamentals, and they built from there. What's the plan of attack for you guys?
I think it's going to be no different to that, mate. It's going to be about defensive elements of the game, winning contested ball. And the most important thing in football clubs is building relationships with each other. So, they're probably the three key pillars at the moment. So we're looking forward to doing that. As we said at the top, we're a young list, and we can build that from the ground up.
How many hours a week would you spend on the ground, on the actual grass, as an assistant coach?
Well, in my part-time role, so I'm there 2 days a week for the pre-season. Mm. And when the season starts, I'm there 2 days a week plus game day. So right. come training on those days is probably 3 hours, 3 to 4 hours on the actual ground, going through drills, game set, game play, game scenarios, developing traits. So it's probably about 3 or 4 hours outdoors. And then probably after they do weights and have lunch, yeah, they might do some touch inside, or maybe back outside at a low key pace.
So Anthony, most people listening wouldn't be aware of actually the training, like the physical nature. Can you actually get a chance now with all these COVID sort of rules in place, and then also the management of players? We know big blokes, to practice their marking, they need to bang into each other and have a bit of a wrestle. How much of that sort of physical training can you actually get done in a week?
Yeah, I'm still to go through that with when getting in there Monday. So hopefully we can get through a fair bit of it. I think last week they were still training in groups. So there's probably 3 or 4 groups going at the train at a time. But I think as of Monday just gone, I think the whole groups have been able to get out there and train as a whole group. So I'm hoping, and I've been told there's going to be allocated time for a fair bit of marking, contested marking, marking in groups of threes and fours, and and not just the marking element, it's the defending, third man across. And also the small forwards who are in there as well are coming back for a crumb and their positioning to be in that play.
If you were to have a garage sale now, there'd be bags and bags and bags full of Collingwood clothing. So why David Noble? So why would Dave Noble of the Kangaroos? What got you across?
It's funny you say about bags and bags of Collingwood gear, because I'm in the caravan park at the moment. I'm still away. And the lady across is a mad Collingwood supporter, and she goes, "Oh, can I have one of those Collingwood travel bags now? The ones with the wheels, so when I go travelling, I can have your initials on the bag." And I go, "Yeah, no worries." And I brought one up the next day for her. So, it was quite funny you said that. But I didn't think anything would come this late into the 2021 season, and I got a phone call from Brady Rawlings last week, if I was still interested in being in the AFL environment. And yep, I said yep, absolutely. And we just worked out a part time role. I'm a part owner in the gym now, and I put a bit of time and effort into that. And I just split my time between both is fantastic.
Where are you caravanning at the present time?
I'm in Germana, just near the Germana Drive-In. So. We had the boat out today with the kids, and had the donut in the back, and flipped the kids over a couple of times. And I think we broke the donut. Yeah, they love it. They love it. We've been out fishing a couple of times as well, but not too lucky with the fishing.
And which players are you really basically been employed to take from potential to regular stars?
Yeah, look, the likes of Nick Larkey and Cameron Zerhan, those two could be a really good combination for the future. I love the way Zerhar goes about it. You know, he's tough, strong, loves a contested mark, and just loves crashing packs. Look, I'm excited working with Tom Goldstein. He's a really good ruckman who's achieved a lot, and I believe he can still achieve a whole lot more. And the likes of, Tom Campbell has been a backup ruckman for a long time, and he keeps putting the pressure on underneath at the VFL level. And the games that I've seen him play at AFL level, he's a crash and bash ruckman who's done a great job. And I hope he can keep putting pressure on to help Goldstein out in that regard. Tristan Cherry is another young kid who's going through the VFL ranks as well. And if they both can put the, the pressure on Tom, that's going to make Tom... sorry, not Tom. Todd, a better ruckman.
Anthony, it sounds like you're trying to encourage all those big key forwards and even North Melbourne to actually let them be key forwards. I remember back in your day, you used to put a few knees in my back when you dropped when I dropped into the hole. But it's not like the new school coaching where they all want the key forwards to get out and defend and get outside 50 and get back and help out. You're encouraging them to kick long to a contest to these big boys?
Well, I reckon that's the way footy's gone for the past couple of years. Now that long contest down the line, and you know that's evolved from the Richmond plays going back 3 or 4 years ago. Kick that ball long down the line and get your forwards, your tall forwards, and your ruckman trying to contest that mark and bring your smalls into it to try and get that crumb and move the ball going forward. So, you know, if we can hold those positions and our tours can take advantage of that, that'll be a great asset. You know, when North are going really well, they're really aggressive. They're a really aggressive team at the ball, at the player. And the longer they can do that, I reckon the longer they stay in games.
And, of course, you would have had something to do with Jaden Stevenson last year. We all know his story and the falling out with the Pies. But like most players, you get a kick up the backside. He would appear as if he's put a pretty good pre-season together already.
Yeah, he gave me a really nice text the other day, Steve-O. He's just happy that I was there, and he's got that Collingwood connection with him, and he's really looking forward to working closely together. I rate Jaden really highly. You know, he's an X factor. We know he had some issues last year, and he tried to overcome them, but you know, when he's up and going, which most of the time he can be, he is dominating forward. He can turn games in the space of 5 minutes.
Well, great to have you on board, Anthony, and we'll let you get back to the donut, and hopefully the kids can stay afloat, but let's hope you can get a little bit of buoyancy in the Kangaroos this year.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks, Jimmy. Have a good day.
One of the greats, Anthony Rocker, joining us here on Sports Day, and plenty more to come. That's all for Wilson Homes. Yes, you're listening to Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Cricket hasn't been immune to the ravages of the coronavirus and like every other sport in the nation and in the universe, it's had to make its fair share of changes. And the BBL itself, Jimmy, has really had to make some changes. To talk about that, Alistair Dobson, the head of the BBL, joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Alistair. It's been a pretty difficult time for everybody right throughout the sporting calendar, but you've had to make some changes to get this season away. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, g'day, Jared. G'day, Jimmy. Good to speak to you both again. I think, as you said, no different to any other sport. I think the landscape around Australia has changed a lot, even during the course of the BBL season with different borders shutting and opening along the way. So we've had to make some changes as we go.
And the biggest one, of course, is that games in Sydney are now no longer, and they're headed to Canberra. And where else are they going to? Canberra and somewhere else? Adelaide.
Yeah, we moved. That's right. We switched a few more into Canberra, who've been a great host of BBL matches this season, and then four more games into Adelaide. And I think both of those grounds are, you know, probably two of the best T20 grounds in the world and can cope with those extra games. And it's really unfortunate we couldn't get BBL matches into Sydney. But I think the challenge we have with multiple sort of border movements and ongoing travel, getting into Sydney is one thing. But as we know, getting out of Sydney is a different story at the moment.
Oh, so big weekend for BBL. They're returning to Melbourne. But the way the Melbourne sides are going at the moment, maybe they can stay away because they're struggling at the moment, the Stars and the Renegades.
Yeah, I suspect both teams, I know they're both really looking forward to getting back into Melbourne and playing in front of their home fans. They're the last couple of clubs to be able to do that this season. Most of the rest have had a chance to play in front of home crowds. And I know they're both looking forward and they need a few wins.
And can they have up to 15,000 people, is that right?
Yeah, both venues, the MCG and Marvel Stadium, have got capacities of 15,000. And we certainly thank the Victorian government for their support in getting these games on, because I know everyone's really excited about playing there. So still tickets available, but 15,000 capacity at both venues.
You guys took a big risk with some new rule changes, X Factor, Bash Boost, Power Surge. Some people calling it Mickey Mouse or gimmicky, but it's actually added a fair bit of interest to the game.
Yeah, I think we went in with a really clear objective around trying to add some strategy and certainly add to uncertainty of games and keeping games alive longer. And I think all the rules that we brought in have in some way delivered that. I think, you know, the Power Surge has been really popular and adds lots of discussion I think the Bash boost is coming into its own towards the end of the season when every single point will count. And I think, you know, the X factor was one that we weren't sure exactly how to go, but I think we've seen a number of games where it's added interest and swung a couple of games in different directions.
Have you got any feedback from the players and the teams on them so far?
Yeah, we're in constant touch with that, as well as our broadcasters and fans. We'll do a much more detailed review at the end of the season. I'd like to think it becomes an annual process of assessing and making changes where required. I think, you know, this is a good start with these three innovations. Whether we keep all three or not will depend on lots of sort of consultation at the end of the season. But you know, so far we're happy with the impact they've had.
You would have had plenty of feedback, all unsolicited, I'm sure, on the lack of a DRS. We might as well add it out to Bobsworth. It seems to me that it's a part and parcel of cricket and umpiring decisions. And as I speak, this is one of the all-time great runouts, Jimmy, behind us that actually was a complete debacle, but they got the ball, they got the job done.
Oh, the one in the Scorchers Thunder game.
Indeed, it was quite amazing. We're seeing about 14 replays of it. But the DRS, now, I know it's economically probably a little bit difficult, but it's got to be brought in the short term, surely.
Yeah, I think economics is one part of it, Jared. I wouldn't deny that, as well as you know, the pace of the game. And I think the BBL is certainly designed to be fast and as minimal disruptions as possible. That's been one of the considerations, you know, historically around DRS and holding the game up. But I think, you know, we've obviously had lots of discussion and debate this year about something coming in. I think if we were to bring something in next year, I think one thing I would say is that we'll have to be very BBL in its nature. I don't think we will just automatically bring in the same system or process as international cricket. BBL is unique, and we'd certainly want to keep that flavour, whether that's different technology or different, you know, a different model. But, you know, certainly something we'll look at. I think our umpires have done an incredible job in the same trying conditions that our players have been in hubs and, you know, away from home for extended periods. I couldn't talk more highly of the job they've done. That said, if there's ways we can continue to improve it, we absolutely will.
Can I put this to you? And it's not so much an issue in the BBL because we don't have it, but I hear a lot of commentators have a crack at the DRS because it slows a test match down. Now, half the time in a test match, you're asleep, and sometimes you only wake up when there's an appeal and the DRS is actually being processed. To me, it's the complete opposite to what I hear a lot of the criticism. And it's actually a spike of interest, something that actually gets everybody focused rather than slowing the game down. I mean, maybe the DRS would help. Certainly helps test cricket for interest, but to me, getting the decision right, the commentators spend the next 5 minutes blowing about it if the decision's wrong.
Yeah, I think on its own that those moments when there's a review are interesting and something you can talk about. I think I'm talking in the context of the overall duration of a BBL match, which is designed for kids and families, you know, often come into their first game of cricket. We're very mindful of how long that game goes for and not only DRS, but other things that may impact the overall duration. So when I talk about the length of the game, it's more the entirety. But, you know, I reckon there's ways we can look at having a review or an umpire review system that doesn't take as long as the full, you know, hotspot and snicko and the like. So it's something we'll look really closely at.
Alistair, how difficult is it going to be going forward attracting the big international superstars down here like Rashid Khan when all these competitions are popping up around the world, 10 over comps, 100 ball, where they can go for 2 weeks and make just as much money as playing 6 weeks here?
Oh, I think we've shown this year, Jimmy, that you know, the quality of the overseas players that we've had in the BBL this year on our analysis is the strongest we've had in a number of years. I think what it shows is the appeal of playing in the BBL is absolutely still there for these players, and whether that's, you know, the weather and the conditions and the crowds and the stadiums they play in. So if anything, this year has actually, you know, strengthened our belief that the BBL is a you know, a really attractive competition for these players to come in. Clearly, we have to stay competitive, you know, in terms of salaries and payments. I think, you know, we're able to work closely with the ACA this year in adding a third overseas player to list, which has added a heap of interest and quality to the competition. I think we're in really good shape to continue to bring these players in. And Rashid Khan's a great example of players that just bring that that X factor in, if you like, and they can't talk more highly of the BBL and want to come back again.
Just by way of interest, Alistair, do you negotiate contracts in USD or AUD? Because if it was in AUD, a lot of these guys would have got about a 15% pay rise over the last 6 weeks with the dollar going so well.
Yeah, well, the contracts are negotiated at club level, Jared. I think the salary cap's in Australian dollars, but I'm sure depending on where the players are coming from, that it's negotiated in different ways. And I think, as I said, being competitive is really important, and whether that's how long they come out for, how much they get paid, other opportunities the players have when they're here. And I think, we're in good shape there.
You would monitor this. Certainly those at Fox Cricket would monitor it. The impact of the Melbourne sides being on the bottom of the ladder from a ratings perspective.
Well, I think for any competition, you want all your teams really competitive, whether that's AFL, NRL or BBL. You want every team thinking, or every fan thinking, their team can win on any given night. So whether it's the Melbourne teams or others, you certainly want everyone competitive. At the same time, it goes without saying that, you know, your teams out of Melbourne and Sydney, you know, probably draw bigger audiences to the game. So we want those teams doing well. But, you know, it's about close games that go right to the last over, if not the last ball, is the critical bit.
Did I hear correctly, next year there's a chance for a game on Christmas Day while George's talking about ratings?
Oh, it's a discussion that comes up every year, Jimmy. I think there's lots of people think that it'd be great to have a game on Christmas Day and something to watch. At the same time, there's so many considerations around players and staff and broadcasters and families that want to do other things, you know, do the traditional things on Christmas Day. I think it's an interesting debate that we have every year, and every year we think about it, and I dare say we'll do it. You know, we'll think about it again for next season.
Don't think about it too long. It's a family day. Surely we can have one that's over and above, or football for that matter.
Yeah, there's absolutely a strong view around that, Jared. I clearly wouldn't deny that, and I think it'd be certainly a very big call if we were to play on Christmas Day. It would certainly not something we've done in the first 10 years of the BBL. I think it would take something significant for that to change.
Appreciate your time, Alistair, and good luck for the rest of the season as we come to the climax, and let's hope it's a great finals campaign.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks, Jimmy.
Alistair Dobson, head of the BBL. Is it a workplace environment, Jimmy, or is it something sort of a little bit more convoluted than that?
Well, most workplace environments don't have your desk bug, do they? So there's the difference already.
You've got a stump, Mike.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, we lean over a desk and talk into a mic, but I'd say 99.9% of people don't go to their desk and have their laptop with the mic on so everyone can hear in the office, do they?
No. I mean, I just get frustrated. And it's the same with AFL football, so it's a workplace. Yeah, we know you're getting paid for it and you're getting paid big money.
There's no work cover.
But most people don't also have to put up with... most people at their work environment don't actually have people pay to see them work.
Or heckle them.
Or, well, exactly. So,
can you imagine John from accounts when he's punching in his last entry? Boo, John! Go home!
I don't think anybody's entitled to pay their $5 to get in and then think that they've got a free hit anybody, anywhere. That's not the issue. But the issue is, I guess, the view of former players who think it's an exclusive workplace. I mean, you could desensitise things to such a degree that no one will want to turn up. What's the Crown? It's a brand new digital harness racing show Thursday nights via SEN's app. Bailey Smith to join us shortly. Welcome back to Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Jimmy, Bailey Smith has had a major impact in his, what would it be, his 3 years in the game, maybe only 2 years. This may be his third year. He's averaged 21 possessions from 18 games last season. Probably trailed off a little bit at stages during the year, but certainly had some big patches. But most impressive is the amount of people that follow him on Instagram. May even have just surpassed your thousands that follow you. Let's find out why they follow him. He joins us. Good on you, Bailey. Great to have you on board in 2021. Is it your third year or your fourth year?
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me. No, it's my third year, so heading into my third. So I've only played the 2 years. So, yeah, looking forward to another year.
So how many on Instagram? I'm only new to Instagram. I've got about four followers. Jimmy's, he'd have thousands. How many have you got?
No, just a couple, mate. No,
you've
I don't
got
know.
I've heard your number three in the AFL.
Nah, I don't know.
I do. You're number three in the AFL.
Instagram's a good tool. It's all right.
What's the attraction?
Well, there you go. Yeah. I don't know. You'd have to ask the people. I'm not sure. I know it's certainly humbling to have a number like that, but at the end of the day, as we all know, it doesn't mean too much, I don't reckon. Yeah.
Are you aiming to be an influencer with your 171,000 and building?
No, mate. Footy's for me, that's for sure. But, yeah, I suppose that's one of those things that just comes along with, I don't know, football, but also, I don't know, other stuff. Just, yeah, I don't know what the interest is, but...
Jimmy's desperate. Hang on, Jimmy. I need to explore this a bit further. Jimmy, the Brownlow and Norm Smith medalist, wants to get a hold of you in just a sec. But have you got any commercial relationships that actually are based on the fact that you've got a burgeoning almost 200,000 followers?
Oh, not at the minute, but I got a few in the works. A few things not coming, but yeah, a few deals and stuff to be spoken about. So yeah, it's all like the first 2 years, I just wanted to focus on footy and try to cement my spot, which I'll continue to do. But now I can sort of not be like sort of my sole focus, and I can try and start to venture out into those sort of things that people do, and yeah, have a crack in that sort of world.
See, this is the changing face of footy, Jimmy. Our producer, he put up, you know, stats, 21 touches, 18 games, but they're not the numbers that the younger generation talk about. It's how many Instagram followers you got.
No, it's not. No, it's not. We love the touches. We love those stats, not the Instagram.
I'll let you off the hook because I can sense you're under the pump here. You might even have a light sweat across the brow, but... 2 years.
A little bit.
Yeah. You haven't had the second year blues. You came in, hit the ground running. What do you put it down to? Just confidence in your game, the role the coach plays? Or you just work on it? How have you maintained consistency straight off the bat?
I don't know. Well, I think putting in a good body of work has helped a lot, obviously, but also the trust in my teammates and Bevo to, you know, put me in the middle at a young age. But yeah, really, when you look at our midfield, the names in there, it's a credit to those boys to obviously get me the footy and help me fit in as best as I could, I guess. And yeah, just learning off them has really helped me develop my game.
Imagine early days of training, fitting in. You add Adam Treloar as well. Josh Dunkley stays. Is it trying to get the right amount of minutes, or who plays where early at training?
Well, I don't even know. We haven't really spoken about it. I think we're still just very excited to have both on board, and you know, I think it'll be really exciting to see what we can do in terms of our midfield again, and try and capitalise all year and try and go deeper into finals again, I guess. It's just sort of exciting. We haven't gone into the actual details yet, but I'm sure everyone will be happy with whatever comes their way.
Well, Adam Treloar is a great pickup, though. I heard some people say, it's going to be difficult to find him in this spot. I mean, he's a fantastic player, and he's going to really just make you a better machine.
100%. He's a gun, really. Obviously, we watched his highlights package today for like an initiation sort of thing. We watched all the boys because we haven't been able to get together because of COVID. We watched it on the green floor, and yeah, he's a gun. So it's just really exciting to see what he'll do for the team. And that's my alarm. And he'll obviously...
So you have an alarm go off every time somebody signs up to Instagram. That is great stuff.
Mate, that was actually for the interview, but it was a few minutes late.
Oh,
so I got the timing wrong. But he'll just make everyone go to another level, I guess, as whenever a good player comes into the side, everyone wants to obviously... get to their level or better, and it'll just bring up the standard. So it's very exciting, I guess.
Another player at your club was probably the second most player spoken about during trade and free agency, Josh Dunkley. He ends up staying. You're a player who's in the game when, you know, player movement is just a norm. You know, players pick up and move and come to different clubs. Does it actually bother players at the Dogs or at a club when a player says, I'm out the door, but they end up staying? Does it have to be addressed?
No, I don't reckon it needs to be addressed. Oh, well, it's been addressed. Just sort of laugh about it and chat about it with Dunks. He's that kind of character. He's an amazing person. And, you know, we welcome him again, I suppose, with open arms. And, there's certainly no malice behind it. So you take it with a grain of salt. It's just, give him love again. So that's fine. It's certainly, I don't know, it's not weird, but I don't know. I suppose it's so normal nowadays for players to want to move and stuff. It's, you don't sort of look into it too much.
Now, you finished around, was it sixth or seventh in the best and fairest in 2020? What's your ambitions for 21?
For 2021, I don't know, just to, I suppose, play some more consistent football.
Are you allowed to say, I want to win the best and fairest, or I want to get in the All-Australian squad? Are you able to say that?
I don't know. I'm sure lots of people have those goals, me included. Of course, I have those goals, but it doesn't come to sort of the front of my mind, I guess. Yeah. Like, obviously, that would be great, but you do just want to improve. And I guess if those sort of fruits of your labour come, like the BNF and All Australian, then I guess you take them if they come. But if not, you just want to keep improving the player you are.
A bloke who had a stellar career and is a part of your coaching group is Rowan Smith. You've got the same surname. Do you get to have much to do with Rowan? Because I suspect he is one of the great coaches, having dealt with him a few times at international rules level.
Yeah, no, he's great. I have lots to do with him. His energy is unmatched, and he just has such a passion for the game that really inspires all of us each day we get in there. So obviously having a great career himself, he just feeds that knowledge onto us. But yeah, no, we have lots to do with him. So he's a ripper.
Everyone's always fascinated by the number one draft pick. You guys picked up Yugel Hagen. Yeah. Geez, he can move across the ground. Are you just looking for him now when you get the ball going forward?
Yeah, of course. He's a really, really good mover. I think he's 197 centimetres or something around there. But yeah, he's certainly impressed since he's come in. It's just great to have another tall forward to look forward to. We have obviously got Josh Bruce and Aaron Norton. And then now you throw in Jamar in there. It's pretty exciting to see as a midfielder looking forward and seeing those names there.
And how's Bevo travelling? Has he got you organised for heading down to Lawn again for the pre-season?
Yeah, no, he's travelling really well. We're certainly getting our head around games because they're just around the corner, considering the 5-plus-year players only just came back like a week ago. So certainly a different pre-season than what we're used to with games being, so close. We're certainly getting prepared for that and the year ahead. So, Bevo's been really good in getting us prepared.
Is it, given that it's a short pre-season, have the pre-season camps been abandoned? Or are you going to have one?
Yeah, well, ours has been abandoned. I think we're doing a night down the peninsula.
Right.
And we're just going to play a bit of golf and it'll be more of a
social
team bonding and, leadership sort of thing and sort of spiritual type thing. Bevo loves that sort of stuff. So we'll do some of that down there. We used to do a Mooloolaba camp for 2 weeks and a camp pre-Christmas as well to like Cape Shank or something for like 5 days. But, those have been scrapped obviously because of COVID, but also the money that I suppose everyone took a hit last year. Need to save up a little bit.
Bevo always likes to get his surfboard out, so it's the mantra or it's down I think you went to Bells at one stage. I saw there was a training camp facility there, and you've been down to Cape Shank as well. Just tell Rowan Smith we gave him another pump up. It's the 50th so far on this program.
Beautiful. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
We're going to take a break. In fact, we're going to take an extended break because that is it for the program. And tomorrow night, we've got a major interview coming up. It's a big name in world sports, so don't miss it. We'll see you at 6 o'clock.